They want to hit the farmers because they think that hits me. I wouldn't say that's nice, but I tell you, our farmers are great patriots.
New talk on Trump trade tariffs. It's Tuesday, April 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the United States and North Korea work on proposed talks, floating aid and information to North Korea. We hear from Myanmar's IDPs, mobile health clinics, and crashing cockroaches. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday touted the United States' very good relationship with China and his, quote, good friendship with President Xi Jinping, but again accused China of taking advantage of the United States for far too long. Rather than blame Beijing, however, Trump criticized previous U.S. presidents, representatives, and negotiators for the current trade situation. Trump threatened to impose tariffs on an additional $100 billion worth of Chinese goods last week after Beijing threatened to target $50 billion worth of U.S. products, including soybeans and small aircraft, for possible tariff increases. Experts have warned that if the tariffs go into effect, U.S. farmers who rely heavily on exporting their agricultural products to China will be among the first casualties. But the president had an answer.
If we do a deal with China, if during the course of a negotiation they want to hit the farmers because they think that hits me, I wouldn't say that's nice, but I tell you, our farmers are great patriots. These are great patriots. They understand that they're doing this for the country, and we'll make it up to them. And in the end, they're going to be much stronger than they are right now.
Earlier Monday, Trump decried, quote, stupid trade with China, contending that U.S. automakers are hurt by hefty tariffs on their exports, while the U.S. imposes a much smaller tax on imported Chinese vehicles. Trump says the United States and China would resolve their escalating fight over tariffs, but the Chinese foreign ministry says trade talks are impossible under current conditions. For more perspective, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center here in Washington.
I think that this has to be a negotiation. The difficulty is that it isn't clear at this point how we begin a negotiation when you have the leaders of both China and the United States speaking primarily to domestic audiences, which want to hear about certainty that can border on bluster. When can they begin speaking to each other about problems that specialists in both countries recognize as major issues?
Is it true that any behind-the-scenes negotiation has been happening despite statements to the opposite?
China denies that there have been any negotiations, but I would not take that as the final word. When you have what are seen in China as insults coming out of Washington, it is impossible as a matter of Chinese political culture to admit that you're involved in discussions with somebody who insults you. So there needs to be a cessation of insults. We need a little bit of time to pass, and then it will be possible for both sides either to sit down and talk or to acknowledge and continue talks that are ongoing.
Donald Trump, before he was president, was somewhat successful, at least, using his bombastic techniques to make the deals that he said he needed for his company. Why doesn't that work now?
It doesn't work because he's no longer a New York and New Jersey real estate baron. That is a distinct culture. He was operating within it, also not as the head of a publicly traded company, in which he had to answer to shareholders, but as the head of a private company. There is almost no analogy to be made between that and U.S.-China relations. That is not the way you can function as President of the United States, where full faith and credit and reliable behavior and demonstrating reliable partnership are really your strongest suit. He's now got a negotiation, a discussion of a sort that he's never faced before. There's no reason to think his past methods would work. Now, that said, his calling a spade regarding China's bad practices, that's welcome and necessary. It could be done with a little more style and grace, and I think that would get us to negotiations a little bit more rapidly. But he is correct about many although not all, of China's bad practices.
The U.S. president calls the Chinese president a friend. Does that do anything?
I think it's better than calling him an enemy. I don't think that anybody believes there's anything like a genuine friendship or understanding between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump. But as a means of political performance and the creating of symbols and signaling, it's useful. And so certainly it's better that he be respectful of Xi personally than that he treat him the way he's treated, for example, Kim Jong-un and other national leaders. But there's no friendship there that really can help advance a difficult negotiation. And how long even a symbolic friendship can last when we are not only being fairly bombastic on the trade side, but simultaneously seem to be signaling an interest in changing our relationship with Taiwan, warming up to Taiwan, changing the careful balance that has maintained peace, you know, across the straits. China cares more about that, the relationship with Taiwan, than they do about the trade relationship. It makes it very hard politically for Xi Jinping to directly or indirectly acknowledge China's bad practices and change them when that could make him look weak vis-a-vis a United States that is also hurting China where it most matters to Beijing, namely in Taiwan. And I think that it's important, too, to understand that China feels fairly strong going into these discussions. It would prefer not to have a trade war with the United States, but it has alternate markets. It's the world's number one trading nation. It is a major provider of aid. It thinks the trend lines are in its favor. And I'm somewhat concerned that even though there are many things that are correct about the Trump administration's positions, the tactics seem to imply that the Trump administration believes it has the relative prestige and power that America enjoyed from the end of World War II until 2008. And we simply don't have that kind of prestige or throw weight anymore.
Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center in Washington, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. United States confirms North Korea willing to discuss denuclearization. Trump decries stupid trade with China. Myanmar's new president prepared for crucial role. Pakistan media blackout of ethnic Pashtun rally triggers outrage. Obesity among Asia-Pacific children is growing a health crisis. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Media reports indicate North Korea is willing to discuss the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula should North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump meet, perhaps in May. The two sides are said to have held a series of secret contacts in New York and separately involving their respective intelligence officials. Last month, Mr. Trump accepted an offer of talks with the North Korean leader, delivered to the White House by a South Korean delegation that visited Mr. Kim in Pyongyang. Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest in Washington, tells VOA's Victor Beatty he is skeptical of the North's motives, wondering what the price for such a meeting will be.
Keep in mind, back in 2009, the Kim regime asked for a reported $10 billion just to sit down with South Korea. My question is what are they going to ask from President Donald Trump to sit down and have that summit? They're going to want something, whether it's demand to have the summit in Pyongyang, which would be a huge diplomatic win for Kim Jong-un, or straight-up cash bribe, the ending of the maximum pressure campaign. The North Koreans always have some sort of strategy to get some sort of concession for talks. So they're going to ask for something. Then, just going a little bit further down the field, what would they want for to actually get rid of their nuclear weapons? The demands the North Koreans are going to have are going to be astronomically high. They could ask for things like hundreds of billions of dollars in economic aid. They could ask for, you know, the removal of U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula. They could even ask for, say, South Korea to get rid of all of its nuclear technology and nuclear reactors. Something we forget is South Korea has over 20-plus nuclear reactors. So when we talk about the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, the North Koreans might have a poison pill there and try to say, well, if we get rid of all of our nuclear technology, Seoul has to do the same. So I think right now we have a lot of unanswered questions, and while I'm hopeful there could be some sort of grand bargain or even a summit, I'm still pretty skeptical.
Some analysts have suggested the president's willingness to meet Kim Jong-un handed North Korea a diplomatic victory, as the U.S. had insisted for years. Any such summit must be preceded by steps toward denuclearization.
If we are going to have some sort of bargain with them, they are going to have to show some sort of willingness to denuclearize. The path, I think, that would be the most logical is some sort of inspections, either UN inspectors or somebody who can vouch for this denuclearization would need to go into North Korea, give a full accounting of all of their nuclear weapons, and then dismantle them, dismantle their reactors, figure out if the North Koreans have transferred any sort of nuclear, you know, information to, say, Iran or somebody else. So these are all the things that would have to happen. And the North Koreans would have to agree to at least some of this before even there could be a summit. Because there's just no way that you could put Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump in a room and just say, okay, guys, you've got to work it out. That doesn't happen in modern international politics anymore. There needs to be deliverables on both sides. That's how summits happen now. So, again, we're going to have to see all this shapes out. But I'm not exactly optimistic.
Harry Kazianis said given Mr. Trump's national security team, headed now by former U.N. Ambassador John Bolton, no U.S.-North Korean summit will likely take place unless Pyongyang first lays out a roadmap on what, to them, denuclearization means. Late Sunday, China announced it is banning more than 30 items to North Korea that could have so-called dual use for their nuclear and missile programs. The South Korean news agency Yonhap said that included equipment, software, and technologies, such as particle accelerators and centrifuges. The export ban is in line with UN Security Council Resolution 2375 adopted last September following the North's sixth nuclear test. Happening now in Asia, former South Korean President Lee Myung-bak has been indicted on embezzlement and bribery charges 3 days after his successor was sentenced to 24 years in prison. The indictment makes Lee the country's fourth leader to face a criminal trial in about two decades. Stay up to date with VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Humanitarian groups in South Korea are using the ocean current to send needed food and information from the outside world into impoverished regions of North Korea. VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Padden reports the activists, many of whom are North Korean defectors, hope that by floating aid across the border, it will get to those in need and not be confiscated by the repressive Kim Jong-un government.
Korean activists are sending out to sea more than messages of hope in plastic bottles. On Kangwa Island in the Yellow Sea, located just south of the inter-Korean border, humanitarian groups are launching aid packages containing rice, medicine, U.S. dollars, and news from the outside world. The ocean's current, they say, will carry the sealed bottles to cities and towns along the west coast of North Korea.
If we set the date and time right, it will get there 100%.
On one day alone, the activist group can send over 500 kilos of rice and 400 computer memory sticks full of South Korean movies and independent news that is banned in North Korea. Jung Kwon Il, a North Korean defector who recently met with U.S. President Donald Trump in the White House, has included a copy of the president's fiery speech last year at the United Nations.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime,
where he both threatened to destroy North Korea for its pursuit of nuclear weapons and strongly criticized the Kim Jong-un government for the widespread starvation and oppression in the country.
So the message that we are sending to them is that the U.S. president knows that you are living these harsh conditions.
United Nations reports that over 40% of the North Korean population is undernourished, and there are concerns that sanctions on exports meant to pressure Pyongyang to give up its nuclear program are increasing poverty and hunger in the country. The North Korean defectors involved in this unconventional aid effort have raised money and donated their time to help those most in need in the country they left behind.
It is very difficult when doing it, but after sending it, I feel proud.
Some of their support also comes from Christian churches that want to send Bibles into the communist North, where religious teaching is also highly restricted. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Coming up, we hear from Myanmar's internally displaced persons. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, five people have been injured after a 5.8 magnitude earthquake rattled western Japan. More tremors are expected in the coming days. The tremor rocked the west of the main island of Honshu, 96 kilometers north of Hiroshima. You're on solid news ground by visiting VOA 60 and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, nearly 100,000 Kachin Internally Displaced Persons, or IDPs, remain in 165 camps in Myanmar's Kachin and Northern Shan State. They have faced chronic displacement since the conflict between the Kachin Independence Army and Myanmar forces resumed in 2011 after a 17-year ceasefire. Steve Sanford speaks with IDPs about life on the run in Kachin State and the growing problems as peace talks falter.
Here in Chatyang Internally Displaced Persons Camp, the chorus of traditional music could easily be mistaken as a sign of hope in troubled times. But the trauma from ongoing attacks and displacement has taken its toll on the young, like 13-year-old Perja Nupan, whose family has been uprooted four times in 7 years.
When I live in Zai Og IDP camp, I thought there would be no more running away from the fighting. But it happened again, just like before. The Burmese army shoots inside the camp. We had to flee and hide in a big tree near the river.
Farming families make up a large part of the camp population, and for most, the loss of land also means a loss of earnings. Kam Ong Long now makes a meager income carving out bamboo cups for local market sales, despite his former farmland being located in an area known for its amber mines.
I feel like the Burmese army targets Kachin people because we have many natural resources like jade and gold mines. They are jealous of us and want to steal everything. That's why they attack the Kachin.
Basics like food, water, and medicine are in short supply, as the Myanmar government has increased restrictions on the movement of international aid. Many of the IDPs survive on donations from local church-based groups, while health issues are often treated with home remedies.
I'm learning how to use herbs for medicine and treatment. We learn how to use herbs to heal diabetes for people in the IDP camp. We also learn how to use herbs to treat the decayed teeth and paralysis. We have to learn from an expert medical doctor.
As the government-controlled parts of Myanmar continue along the path of economic growth and stability, those in many ethnic areas are still waiting for their chance. Steve Sanford reporting from Kachin State, Myanmar.
This news from VOA Asia. An Indonesian court has sentenced the mastermind behind the 2017 twin bus terminal bombings 9 years in jail. The attack killed three police officers, injured 12. The world's largest Muslim-majority country has grappled with a recent resurgence in radical activity inspired in part by Islamic State. See more online at VOA 60 and on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now in VOA Asia, about 1% of the world's population lives with a mental condition called bipolar disorder, characterized by swings between elevated and depressed moods. In most cases, timely interaction with psychotherapists, family, and friends can alleviate the symptoms. VOA's George Pudich reports researchers in Denmark say modern technology can help by keeping track of a patient's symptoms and summoning help quickly when needed.
Manifestations of bipolar disorder range from mild to severe, but all patients experience periods of exaltation and depression, and each has its own symptoms. During manic periods, patients are extremely active, sleep less, and sometimes make risky decisions. The depressed mood makes them cry, stay in bed too long, and sometimes think of suicide. This is when patients need someone to call them, says Peter Hegeland, who suffers from the disorder.
If you feel depressed, it can be really tricky and hard to tell people I need help.
Danish company Monsenso created a smartphone app that can analyze the owner's moods and behavior and alert therapists and family members. One of the bipolar patients testing the app, Mads Trier Blom, says when he was feeling tense, a therapist monitoring his condition remotely immediately called to ask how he was doing.
This measuring back to a clinician, and the clinician is able to call you back when she sees something which makes her alert, is very special for Monsenso as far as I know.
In addition to registering the patient's behavior and the interactions with others that may influence their mental health, the app also requires some self-assessment by the patient. All data is compared with the patient's account at the health provider's office. Swedish psychiatrist Christopher Soderston is using the app with his patients.
This type of sensor data can, in combination with self-assessments, provide a hint regarding whether they match up or if there is a discrepancy.
Bipolar patients who tested the app say early registration of their mood swings is helping them learn to cope with the symptoms when they appear. George Pudich, VOA News.
As technology continues to develop, the next generation of life-saving robots is right around the corner. These new robots could be inspired by cockroaches. VOA's Faith Lapidus explains how.
The cockroach. They can survive anywhere. They're fast, they zip around, and they crawl up walls. And that's why roboticists like them and are designing robots that imitate them. To discover how the insects manage their maneuvers, the scientists watched real roaches in slow motion.
We found that cockroaches would rapidly run towards the wall and basically collide into it head-on and continue cycling their legs to climb up the wall.
So Kaushik Jaram and his team at the University of California, Berkeley, designed a six-legged robot with a soft exoskeleton, just like a cockroach. It uses the momentum of a head-on crash to tip itself upward and climb a wall on its sticky pad toes. The smart, flexible body allows it to quickly scale a wall and change direction without relying on complex sensors, which most robots need to detect and move around objects in their path. That can take valuable time in situations like search and rescue operations through hazardous or rough terrain.
If you want to use a robot, then you need the robot to be able to run on the ground, maybe climb up a wall, get over obstacles, crawl into spaces. And so we really need a robot which is capable of not just doing one thing, but many of these things together.
Cockroaches may be unpopular among homeowners, but researchers exploring the future of robotics call them their bio-inspiration. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us all over the internet, like on iTunes and SoundCloud. We stream each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook, and you can find us on voanews.com. That's our website. You can also find us on the radio throughout much of Asia, like in Malaysia. Listen to us on Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur. We thank everyone there who is listening today. And as always, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.